Welcome back to the second hour of edition number 277 of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. We're broadcasting on the Sunday House Call Radio Network and from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa. And we'll be taking your calls very shortly at 1-800-580-2372, 1-800-580-2372. But we have a special guest, Roger Bate, economist with the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. He's board member and director of Africa Fighting Malaria and author of Making a Killing, The Deadly Implications of the Counterfeit Drug Trade. And it is the counterfeit drug trade that we've been discussing for over the past 45 minutes. And I, Mr. Bate, I really wanted to cover the policy recommendations and how we solve this problem, because this is, again, it is somewhat astounding, as you mentioned, that you can have someone that's in the illicit drug trade, producing opiates, cocaine, and such, having the risk of tremendous prison time, potential prison time, fines, loss of property, and yet for someone who is producing counterfeit drugs, who arguably could be harming even more people than the illicit drug trade, and yet getting 6 weeks in jail or a small few hundred dollar fine, how do we reconcile that?
Well, it's something that, again, made me want to work on this topic and see what could be done. And I'm certainly not alone. A lot of people are trying to combat this. The first thing is that every single country in the world needs to make it a criminal offense to counterfeit medicines, to pass off something as a antimalarial or an antibiotic drug that should be there to save a child or an adult's life. It should be illegal to pass off something that's a sugar pill or something as a real drug. And it's still, in many countries, it's not a criminal offense. So that's the first thing, and as a global problem, that one needs to have happen. But it's much easier to put laws on the statute book than it is to actually enforce them. So the next thing that needs to happen is that countries need to make it a priority and to fund, you know, investigative police work in this area, and also to not just the, if you like, the stick, but also the carrot, to help with education and training so that those which are at the margins of illegality, making substandard drugs at the moment, actually improve their manufacturing practices. Because a lot of drugs out there kill people, even though the manufacturer is trying to do his best job, but he just didn't do a good enough job. Mm-hmm. Every company in the world occasionally produces a bad batch of drugs. And in the West, they're almost always found. In many developing countries, that doesn't happen. So that's critical that that happens. Then you need better information sharing. Interpol and some of the World Health Organization's impact group against counterfeiting need to exchange information for, so that as soon as we know about a counterfeiter operating in one location, that he or she or their company is not able to ply its trade elsewhere. Ultimately, we need better education of individuals, so that and that includes all of your listeners out there right now. Mm-hmm. When you're buying pharmaceuticals, you're pretty certain that if you're buying them in Canada or the United States, you're buying good stuff. But when you open your pill pots, look at them. Are the pills falling to pieces? Are they crumbling? Because they shouldn't be. They should not be falling to pieces in your hand. I mean, I'm not saying a little bit flaking off because right. some of it depending on. But, you know, are they crumbling to pieces? Do they not have the normal stamp on them that they usually have, if there's a stamp normally on your medications? So there are things that the individual can do, and there should be improvements in the kind of whistleblowing lines for people operating in companies where they know things are being done fraudulently. I was contacted by a whistleblower from an Indian pharmaceutical company because he wasn't sure that his bosses were ever going to deal with some of the lax production. And I gave that information to the FDA and the World Health Organization, and that company has had to clean up its act. We need more incentives for people like that who are operating in the companies themselves. There were a wide variety of other things that could be done, but ultimately, because I work on this for the poorest countries in particular, mm-hmm. we need to make sure that you have those basic things put in place. Ultimately, for the safety of North Americans, it is good that the FDA is setting up inspections in India and China, because there are very, very good producers in both countries. There are good, particularly in India, good final drug producers, and there are good intermediary producers in China. And it's all almost for their benefit too, because they're being their market is being hamstrung by the illegal and bad producers of those countries. So it's good that they, the FDA is going to go and inspect there. But frankly, that's not going to stop it in and of itself. We need to be encouraging the Indian and Chinese governments to take this more seriously. And I believe that, that both governments are going in that direction, but the more fuss that North Americans make about this, the faster that they will react and deal with this. And if that means boycotting drugs from companies that don't live up to good standards, that's exactly what should be done. And that is what we are beginning to see. But one thing I should stress, don't immediately think that we should stop buying intermediate ingredients from these countries, because if you do that, the price of your drugs is going to go up enormously. Because already 40% of the active ingredients in U.S.-based drugs come from India and China. And that's going to go up to 75-80% because they can produce very good quality intermediate products cheaply, much more cheaply than we can do here. And consequently, we have to work with our international partners and get them to respond. Ultimately, I see that as being the way forward.
Now, as an economist, you noted very rightly in your book that there are other motivating factors for people with respect to how they are paid, especially in developing countries where the income that they're making may not be commensurate with the work that they're doing, and that there's a potential then for corruption all the way through the person who's working on the line to up through government agencies and through in government itself. And you made a point that part of the problem is that there is, as you mentioned, so much money to be made through the counterfeit means that is, if there's no commensurate income, that at least would inhibit, or for someone to say, you know, I'm comfortable with what I'm earning now, I don't have to take this extra risk, to sort of thwart that type of behavior. Is that a component in your policy recommendations?
Absolutely. You need carrots and sticks. You need, you know, when someone is obviously transgressed and has been called before a court and has been bribing officials, you know, all of the officials and the counterfeiters need to be thrown in jail. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But on the other hand, when you're dealing with someone who may be working on the line in a production line and they're not making very much money, sure. They deserve to earn more money, and maybe we need to provide them with more opportunities. But you know, it's we're partly dealing with a massive economic development issue. One of the reasons that the active ingredients coming out of India and China are much cheaper is because their wage costs are much lower, and we're not going to be able to mandate from the United States or from Canada right. that they should be paid more. Frankly, you know, we wouldn't listen if someone from India is saying your workers should be paid less.
Correct.
To make them commensurate with that. You know, so it's working with them to and encouraging. And frankly, I mean, it's slightly off topic, but one of the reasons that India and China have done so well over the last few decades is they've opened up their economies, they're trading more, and they've brought 400 million people out of poverty. Mm-hmm. And that's good news for them particularly, but it's also good news for us because they want to sell us stuff.
Right.
And so we need to work with them, but we can't mandate that they be paid more. We can, you can make sure that they're punished if they do things wrong, and you can encourage them by saying, yes, we want to buy your products. And that's the way that they will get paid more, because we want to trade with them. And ultimately, as economists, that's the obvious answer, but I think it's also very true.
Roger Bate is an economist with the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. He's a board member and director of Africa Fighting Malaria and author of Making a Killing, The Deadly Implications of the Counterfeit Drug Trade. And Mr. Bate, I'd like to thank you so much for taking this time and extending this time to provide a very thorough evaluation and presentation of the counterfeit drug trade and its implications around the world and in North America to a much more minor extent, but nevertheless opening up the eyes and ears of our listeners to understanding the scope of the problem. And I look forward to speaking with you again on this topic and others with regards to the medical field.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure to be on, and I'm glad that you cover the subject. It's part of the education of people out there so that they know that, you know, that they should check their pills.
Thanks again.
Thank you.